A year later, the Mario Stefani collection opened at the Querini Stampalia, a library and museum housed in an exquisite 16th-century palace. Stefani's life's work had been rescued from the squalid disorder of his house and installed in a place where it would be preserved for future study. The collection included his writings, his paintings, portraits, memorabilia, and his correspondence with such people as Alberto Moravia, Giorgio De Chirico, Pier Paolo Pasolini, and others. Strangely, however, there were no unpublished poems among the papers donated. This only fueled fears among Stefani's friends that Bernardi might have mistaken Stefani's jottings for trash and thrown them out before the controversy over the estate became public and forced him to hire experts to cull the material with a professional eye. The librarians at the Querini Stampalia, however, were quite content with the acquisition of Stefani's library of 6,800 books, most of which were works by lesser-known local poets. The collection was the largest of its kind. As for Stefani's own poetry, librarian Neda Forlan said that it would be difficult to assess its standing, since the poems had not yet been the subject of academic study. He was very well known locally and nationally, and some of his poetry is truly beautiful, she said. But during his lifetime, he was never considered exceptional. Perhaps it is too soon to say. The distance of time will be needed for an objective interpretation of his work. Meanwhile, Stefani's heir, after 2 years, was still working gratis for his parents at the fruit and vegetable shop, still rising at 4:30, and still living in the same one-room apartment as before, but with a wife and 2 children now. The renovation of Mario's apartment had not yet begun. Nicola is taking care of things a little at a time, Christina Belloni told me. He paid for the experts who worked on the inventory, and because of what they found, they have been able to reconstruct the figure of Mario as a poet, as a writer, as a critic, and as a homosexual who was one of the first to have the courage to admit it openly, even reconstructing his collection of erotic literature. Sometime after being recognized as Mario Stefani's legal heir, Nicola Bernardi ordered a gravestone placed on Stefani's burial niche on the cemetery island of San Michele. Then he asked the catalogers of Stefani's papers to look for a suitable quotation to use as an epitaph. They found one in the text of a speech Stefani had given, and Nicola had it engraved on the stone. Even more than a poet, I would like to be remembered as one who loved others. Albert Gardin's protests and accusations about Mario Stefani's sad end eventually subsided to a murmur. By 2003, he had become involved in a clamorous public debate over an 8-foot statue of Napoleon that was being given to the city by the French Committee to Safeguard Venice. One side favored accepting the statue on the grounds that Napoleon was part of Venice's history, for better or for worse. The other side, for which Albert Gardin was a prominent spokesman, was vehemently opposed, calling Napoleon a terrorist, a plunderer, a traitor, a barbarian, and a vandal. The anti-Napoleon side was preparing to haul Napoleon before a posthumous Nuremberg-style ad hoc tribunal. I was walking along Calle del Scalatère when it occurred to me to drop in on Gardin and have a chat about the Napoleon controversy. As I approached his wife's antique clothing shop, I saw the top of Gardin's head poking up behind a pile of hats and boxes, as usual. But when I put my hand on the door, I caught sight of something that stopped me cold. The words, "Vintage Clothing, Special Sale on Hats and Shawls," had been written on the window to the right of the door, with a blue felt-tip marker.